Active Shooters, Realities, Dayton, El Paso, and The Promise for Peace. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the emotional, psychological, physical, and everything in between. We're looking at life through one of the most ancient of all Christian fabrics, namely Armenian Orthodoxy. This is episode number 583 of The Next Step. I invite you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting, The Next Step with Father Voskin. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Voskin brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armodoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Remember, those were the days. Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. They were good days, right? It's always nice to look back and remember those days. What's going on in this world? What is going on? Just a couple days ago, shocked, incensed, we used all kinds of words, right, to describe it nowadays. Active shooter on the loose. 20 people in El Paso. Another 10 people, but, you know, hundreds of people who have been forever, ever ruined. Not only the ones that were injured, but we're talking about their families forever changed, altered. Because of an active shooter. Because of one person with a gun. Or is it one person? Is there more? Is society responsible for it? Are there other factors that are responsible? Or is it just this lone player out there? Yeah, I'm talking about what happened in El Paso, what happened in Dayton, Ohio, over this past weekend. And you know, those were the days, the simple days. And I started looking at different ways of trying to process something that's beyond processing, really. So I see this thing on Facebook, you know, one of these signs, right? So this is put up by one of the Armenian churches. Seven keys to life. Number one, God first. Number two, love one another. Number three, never hate. Number four, give generously. Number five, live simply. Number six, forgive quickly. Number seven, be kind always. Words to live by, right? Yeah, it's nice. It's nice, but doesn't that kind of require everybody playing by those rules? And isn't it true that if we picked out some random rules, if everybody played by them, maybe, you know, it could work? Isn't the problem that we're not all playing by the same rules? We're trying to get others to play by our rules because they work for us, but it doesn't work for others. So, a simple life.
I sit beside the dog. Beneath the mire, cold, grey, dusty day, the morning lake drinks up the sky. Kathmandu, I'll soon be seeing you and your strange, bewildering time.
Yeah, we did look for simple things, didn't we? We sometimes found them. We used to talk about what was called retreat because life was stressful. We needed to retreat. And we found different ways of retreating. Nature. Nature was always an inspiration for me. It was also a retreat for me. It was also a place to just get away. Others would say music. Yeah, it was for me too. Because when you couldn't get away from nature, it was kind of like the city dweller's nature, right? You'd put on a tune and it would take you places.
I'll soon be touching you and your strange, bewildering time will hold me down.
You'd bring nature into your life and it was an escape. We all need escapes. We all need places where we can get up. And what about some harder escapes? Huh? What about alcohol? What about something a little harder to do? What about drugs? Legal, illegal, well, we have ways of classifying, don't we? But you know what? They do something to us, right? Otherwise, they wouldn't be popular. I remember somewhere along the way, I think it was during the Reagan times, where we had this... this motto, just say no to drugs. And then the obvious question comes up, well, why are people saying yes to drugs? Well, drugs are so bad, they're horrible. Yeah, but they are doing something to people. And maybe really the rhetoric shouldn't be that drugs are bad, they're harmful for you, because obviously people are taking them and they're finding some good in it, just like alcohol. It's an escape from... Well, it's an escape from where they're at, from life, which is the bigger question. What are you escaping? You remember a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, I shared with you an interview with this lady who had gone through massacres, through the pogroms in Azerbaijan, and she had escaped. She's coming as a refugee, and now she's talking about the problems that her children have, right? Well, now we could... classify them as first world problems, right? Third world problems is, how am I going to get a clean drink of water? How am I going to survive? Our first world problem, how am I going to survive without Netflix tonight? What am I going to do? Oh, the cable is broken. I don't have internet tonight. Uh-oh. What's going to happen? I mean, think about it. This is what it comes down to. We have all of the comforts, and now I think people are asking, okay, so what are we escaping? What are we escaping? Why is alcoholism, why is drug abuse still very, very high, big problems? Escape, right? Okay, let's not pretend we're not part of the problem too. Religion. Karl Marx said, religion is the opiate of the people. I remember finding that in one of the books when I was a student in Armenia, then part of the Soviet Union. Oh, man, you could find books from Karl Marx for pennies. 25 kopecks, 30 kopecks, 30 cents. I remember finding one called Karl Marx on Religion. And I purchased it for something like 20 cents. It was a huge book. And I read it. And, you know, part of the exercise for me was just reading Armenian, just to increase vocabulary. And so anything I could get my hands on, I would read. And I found this book, and Karl Marx on Religion, and there it was. Grona Zhogovurti Hashishne. It is the hashish, the opium of the people. And I know it bothers some, but when you think about it, isn't religion also used as an escape? Because I got to tell you, after what happened this weekend, they came up with the figure that I think the Dayton shooting was the 250th shooting, what we call now active shooter. This guy just gets out and he starts shooting. And it's happening everywhere. Just happened last year by us in a small town called Thousand Oaks. And it was a little bit too close for comfort, because a lot of our nephews, nieces, our children, they would hang out at that place. Not hang out as a regular, but they've gone there. And there was an active shooter. We hear about them in movie theaters. In fact, we are now at a point where we are living on the edge. They call it a phenomena. We're living on the edge. Did you see what happened in Times Square yesterday? In Times Square yesterday, major, major panic. Why? Because a motorcycle backfired and the people thought it was shots being fired. Gunfire. And I don't blame them. People running for their lives. Until finally the police came in and calmed everybody down and said, no, it's just a motorcycle backfiring. I don't know. You assume the worst. We're at that point right now, right? We're now assuming the worst. Whereas before you'd just write it off, oh, of course it's a motorcycle backfiring. Now, no. It's an active shooter. It's somebody shooting. Somebody taking out lives. And so now, call it caution, call it fear, but whatever the case may be, we've changed. We are all on edge, and we're living like this. Remember a few years ago, we were saying that the war on terror, after 9/11 here in this country, after over 3,000 people finding their death after the Twin Towers came back. We proclaimed a war on terror. Could that ever be won? Well, in many ways, yes, we are winning that war, but in many ways, no, right? Because our life has changed. All of our lives have changed. If you haven't felt it, go take a trip. I mean, I remember when before 9/11, you used to be able to just go right on the plane. In fact, how many times we'd put a loved one on the plane, you'd go on the plane, you'd say goodbye. I remember with my grandmother taking her on the plane, and then you make sure that they're seated, they're okay, and then you get off. Oh, no, not anymore. Not anymore. I mean, it's basically strip search now. Yeah. I don't know where you're listening from. I know things are different because I'm kind of like surprised having traveled through South America, through Asia, through Europe. Not all checkpoints are the same. Let me say it that way. I mean, but here, wow. Might as well call it a strip search. They put you through machines. They check out what's going on. What are you doing? Well, this is the war on terror. We're going to be vigilant. Life has changed. As I shared with you through the years, we've been talking about technology. Technology has changed us. I forgot who it was, the CEO of Oracle or somebody who said, privacy, get over it. There is no more privacy. And it's true. Yeah, get over it. What we used to call private times. No. You're now talking. Your words are being listened to by your phone, your smartphone, by your Alexa device, people all around you. You don't know if you're being recorded. Life has changed. We're looking for that simpler life. We're looking for something out there, but no. Technology, life, and values. That's one we don't want to talk about, values, the different values. And I shy away from it too. I'm shared with you because, we are a podcast that has been kind of developing, going on for the last 12 years. And we talk about different things. And, right after the shooting this past weekend, I don't know what it was, episode number 40 of The Next Step. Oh, I know. We were cleaning out some drawers and we found it on CD. Back in the old days, back in the old, old, old days, like a few years ago, The Next Step used to be published, yes, on the internet, but we used to also publish CDs. Yeah, hang on to those CDs if you've got some of them, you old timers. But we used to distribute CDs. They'd be available. And so I found Next Step number 40. And I popped it into one of the last remaining CD players in my possession, namely my car. I popped it into the car CD, and I'm listening to it. I'm going, wow. I mean, we were talking back then, and this number 40 would be, I guess, during the first year. We were talking about issues that were taking place in Darfur. We were talking about genocide. We had the global perspective as part of the next step. And we've always been talking about the different things that have been influencing us, what influences us, and basically this quest for relevance. Let's say it that way. Because if you're not relevant, then what good are you? If it doesn't make sense in your life, what good are you? I mean, we're talking about a Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and people are praying. And it's kind of like bothersome to me that people are saying, oh, well, we're praying for peace. We're saying, I know, you've got to keep praying. But listen, this idea that somehow God is a Superman who's going to just swoop down from the skies and take the bullets for you is absurd. And yet people are thinking in those terms. The basic question, the theodicy that people are searching for, an answer to the problem of evil, is usually in some kind of supernatural force that's going to come out of the sky and save the day. And all too often, religion does that, including ourselves. When we talk about, you know, in the end, things will be reconciled. Well, sure, they're going to be. But what about in the meantime? Are we supposed to suffer? One of the archbishops of the Chaldeans, wrote to Pope Francis and talked about the martyrdom of the Chaldeans. And I was reading that. I'll put it on the website. I'll put it on our show notes today. I was reading that, and it reminded me so much of Armenians, how we talk about the martyrdom of the Armenians. But shouldn't we get over that? Shouldn't we be at a point where martyrdom shouldn't be an issue? We shouldn't be looking to martyr ourselves. We should be talking about how we're living that Christian faith, not dying for it. Defending the faith, not all, and that doesn't always mean shields and swords and guns. No. Defend the faith with your actions, with the works you're doing. And that's why, as I said, the values, where are our values? And I'm the first person to tell you that I'm not one of these guys keen on teaching values in school. I'm the first person to tell you I don't want prayer in school. School shouldn't be about teaching prayer. Because if you allow my prayer in the school, you've got to allow everybody else's. And I'll tell you honestly, I don't want everybody else's prayer in there. Some religions, I've got to tell you, are just too far out. And so this kind of equalness, you know, like, okay, you're going to say a prayer? Well, then we're going to balance it off with another prayer from this denomination or this interfaith group and everything. No. I'm intolerant for intolerance. I mean, some of them are just really, okay, let me say it, wacko. And you know what? I'm admitting it. They'll look at me and they'll say, you're wacko. And we go on and on. We talk about these religions. This is mine and this is yours. These are just basic faith items. These are issues of faith. You believe it or you don't. I mean, I'm not an apologist. You know what apologetics is? It's these reasoned arguments or these items to justify something. And you know, there's apologists. We have a lot of writings. The church fathers wrote as apologists. Today we have a lot of apologists, people who basically write or talk about the faith being this way or that way. Let's put it down really simply. Why are you in your faith? It works for you. It may not work for everybody else, right? And why does it work for you? It works because it does. It's not because of reason. In fact, the Armenian Church, right off the bat, tells you it's not about reason. The first step in the Armenian Church exposes you to this hymn, Horut Chorin Anhas Anaskispan. Mystery deep, inscrutable. It is beyond this reason. That's what we believe. Does that mean you don't use your reason? No, use your reason. But don't come here and tell me that I'm right, you're wrong. You know, these videos that have become so popular on the internet. I just, God love the internet that we have this ability to send out these. And you know, some of these videos I've done have gone viral. And it's always amazing to me, the people who will come out. Well, that's not what Jesus said. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? That's not what Jesus said. Like, what does that mean, what Jesus said? Where did you get your Jesus from? You got it from a Bible which was put together by the church. Get with the program, okay? You understand Jesus because of a church which cared so much for it, which God shed his blood for. A church has delivered that message to you. And I'm not talking about reason. I'm talking about simple chronology. God so loved the world that he gave us, not the Bible. He gave you Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ so loved us that he gave us his body, his church. And the church so loved us that the church wanted us to know the message, gave us the Bible. That's why you know Jesus. They come to you and they start arguing. You know, you're a priest of the apostolic church. No, this is what Jesus said. What are you talking about? I would have more respect for you if you turned to me and said, you know what? I don't believe what you're saying. That's fine. You're entitled to that. You're entitled. Everybody's entitled. Just as I respect you for saying that, I hope you can respect me for the beliefs that I have. But to sit there and tell me, this is not what Jesus said. On what ground? Where are you getting that information? Jesus, for us, was love incarnate, was God incarnate. God is love, which includes tolerance, which includes compassion, which includes caring, which includes sacrifice. And so all of a sudden we've got religion competing against religion. And so we start talking about apologetics. We start talking about being comforted by religion. Well, I hope it comforts you. It comforts me. And yes, at some point we need to admit that for many it is a point of escape. But not for all. True Christianity is not about escape. It's about confronting. It's about seizing the opportunity to make change. It's about responsibility in your life. Now, both these incidents happened over the weekend. We were incensed. We couldn't believe it. We woke up to these horrific, horrific crimes being flashed on our television sets, being splattered across the internet. And we're reading them, and they become very real. For me, they were very real because I visited both of these places. My in-laws used to live in El Paso. We visited there. So all of a sudden, you hear about it, and you start thinking about the streets, about the people, about what you saw. I've been to Dayton, Ohio. A couple of years ago, we went to Ohio for a wedding. And then we went off to Dayton. We spent a day there. And so all of a sudden you hear about Dayton and then you start thinking about the places. They're very real. Very, very real. You start seeing the street corners, the faces. And here's the sad part. As real as these places are, these are not unique situations in the world. What we've been talking about here on The Next Step for the past 12 years, what my ministry has been about for the past 35, 37 years, has been about understanding that we are people of this earth, of this world. When we talk about an active shooter coming out, do you realize that these are daily events that are happening in places like Syria? These are daily events that are happening in Africa. These are daily events in the lives of so many people in our world. And the tragedy of all this is all we're doing is we're polarizing ourselves. Instead of working towards being a one people, a united front against evil, we are now polarizing, saying, you are the cause. You're the cause. And yes, unfortunately, we have politicians who are telling us one way or another, and what's happening is we've left it all for the politicians instead of taking personal responsibility. After the shootings, what was the one call? Oh, what is the government going to do about it? What are the laws? Let's bring in the legislatures. Let's have them come back from their vacations to talk about it. Hold it, folks. Slam the brakes on. Why are you giving up control of your life to other people? That's what I want to talk to you about during the second half of this show, because as much as this horrible news hit us this weekend, and as much as we're incensed and it slapped us around, also some beautiful. I saw some grass growing through the pavements. And so it tells you that it's not all about concrete. There is some beautiful life out there. Let's take a break right now as we play the song of the day. I'll be back in a couple moments. Inspired from earlier in this podcast, a little bit of Cat Stevens here and there. Why not play an entire song? We'll have a link on today's show notes, not only to this song, but to all of Cat Stevens' repertoire. You know, yeah, he did change. He became Yusuf Islam. I think it's his converted name. I don't know if he still performs under Cat Stevens or uses that name. Whatever the case, we will have a link on today's show notes so you could check it out. Definitely, he was somebody very, very important in my life musically, because, you know, we used to listen. My sister and I would sit there and hours we'd listen. In fact, it was one of the first concerts we went to together, to see Cat Stevens at the LA Forum, if I remember right. We were probably in not only nosebleed, but we were directly across. So you got to think about the huge Forum directly across from what I remember. And you could just see this small, tiny, little, itty-bitty guy with a guitar in his hands. But, oh, did he know how to play, how to sing, and most importantly, to inspire us. Hope you enjoyed it. Looking for that simple life, right? It doesn't exist anymore. I think that's what the first part of today's show was all about. It's like, it's really a crazy world. But in this craziness, how do we define ourselves? What are the parameters of our faith? Is faith just something, is our belief in God just something that if we can just kick back, things will take care of themselves? Or do we actually become active participants in the peace that God wants to bring? For instance, think about what happened on Christmas Eve. The shepherds saw the star. The angels sang, "Peace on earth, goodwill towards men." Right? So in other words, the first message, the first Christian message of Christ's presentation here on earth was one of peace. Now, what happened right afterwards within, I forgot what the time frame was. Was it in the first year or something? Right? Herod had all of the kids killed. So you say because of Christ coming that all of a sudden there was the massacre of the innocents. Yeah, it's easy to make that connection. And so many other connections are made because of religion. So you say, well, what's the sense of that religion? Is it like war? What's it good for? Absolutely nothing, they say. But what is this faith about? Where is that peace? What is that peace? Jesus says, "I give you my peace." Where is that peace? In a world that we have today where everything is about shooting up and we see actual manifestations of our hatred coming out in shooting up people, can we talk about peace? Is there a language of peace? Is there something to talk about? Well, I want to believe yes, but I also want to believe that I'm an active participant in making sure that language is understood. In other words, we need to be able to make that language come out. And there's two things that I want to just share with you that took place over this past weekend, and both of them are going to point to that. One of them was this event we went to for the Halo Trust. It was another example where people are doing the work that is, in other words, taking the responsibility for our lives. And the second one is the example of what we saw in Armenia. And that's where I want to start off, okay? When we talk about, is it possible? Last year, we had what was called the Velvet Revolution. Now, do not take this lightly. Because you say, okay, it's Armenia, it's a small. But I've been sharing with you for the past 12 years on this podcast. From day one, I've been telling you about there's something unique about that place. It's at the crossroads of civilization. It's between three continents, between Africa, Asia, and Europe. people have gone through there. They've raped and pillaged the land and the people, and yet it's been standing there. And not only that, you go into the church, and what's the one message that comes out in that church? Peace unto all. There is no other liturgy that has, no other people have a liturgy where peace unto all is expressed so prolifically and so continuously throughout the liturgy. It's there, peace unto all. And you say, wait a minute, what are you guys talking about? You've never known peace. That's right. You're absolutely right. And that's the point. For people that haven't known peace, we really have some audacity to talk about it. And it really requires us to dig a little bit deeper than we usually do. It's more than that superficial look at what the Armenian church has to say, what the Armenian people have to say. It really is in our best interest to dig deep. And that's where Armodoxy is about. This is what I share with you every week. Take a deeper look, and you're going to find something there that is beyond the words that you use, beyond your understanding, that there is a true peace. And that peace is greater than what you can imagine. And perhaps here is a key that we need to get this Armodox message out to people beyond ourselves. There is peace, and it is bigger than what you define. So let's start off with that. What is it about this group of people that have been just sitting there, that have never had really any military might nor military strategy, and yet we are there? I mean, I just got back from Sasnashen. People over there, we're in this little village, right? We're talking about the United States military, the Air Force lost a plane there. You know, the shoot down. And I made a big point of telling the Air Force people, no, it wasn't the Armenians. We don't have that kind of military might. There was something called the Soviet Union who had occupied, but they weren't able to last. They were shot down too, right? But this faith, no military power, no military strategy, but a faith in God. A faith that the church has passed along to us has kept us alive. Not only kept us alive, kept us thriving, kept us alive. And in that survival, we have been building. Okay, remarkable? Yeah, if it's remarkable, then maybe it's up to us to look a little bit deeper, right? So a Velvet Revolution takes place. An entire system, an entire people, their entire political system is changed without the shedding of blood. They called it a Velvet Revolution. There was no bloodshed. Unheard of. Peace unto all. Peacefully changing. But you know what? It's taking place vis-a-vis a political mechanism. And here's where we've got problems. Because you know that politics is faulty. You know that politics corrupts, as does the church, as does religion. Yes, it can corrupt. But I'm talking about the purity of the religious state. To find what Jesus is talking about, you find the purity. You find the essence. You find the God light. It's that pearl. That once you find it, you're willing to sell everything you have just to acquire that pearl, Jesus says. It's a pearl of great value. That's what this piece is all about. Okay, so we've got this model that took place on political grounds, but still it did take place. Is it possible that the prayers, is it possible that the influence, is it possible that in those prayers, we found the inspiration, we found the means, we find the mechanism to bring about change without the shedding of blood? The Velvet Revolution. Just by chance? Just by one political leader? Or is it the thousands upon thousands of prayers through the centuries that are in this very holy, holy space called Armenia. Possible, right? And maybe the understanding that it's something beyond an existential experience, but is something for us to actually sink our teeth into and understand that we are part and parcel of that. The event that took place this weekend was a fundraiser, and more than fundraiser, I want to say an awareness raiser for the Halo Fund. Now, those of you who remember and know the Halo Fund, we've talked about it. We've had director here on this show. We've done interview. If you don't know about it, what happened back in the 1980s, there was the Karabakh. Today we call it Artsakh in its proper Armenian name. But at that time it was called a region called Nagorno-Karabakh by its Russian name. And it was seeking its independence. And there was all kinds of military actions that were taking place there. In fact, there's a missile that if you get out to this area, Artsakh, if you still see it, it's just like lodged inside the wall of a church. I think they disarmed it, but it's still there. You can see it. The church wall stopped that missile, that bomb, from hitting. Tell you something? Okay. No, this is really wild, okay? God's hand, existential, something outside of ourselves, it's happening. No, but that wall had to be built by people. Right? Think about it in those terms. Yes, maybe God did stop that, but it was in a wall that was created by people working together. The metaphor of that wall is a really important one. Working together between God and people. And so what the enemy, what the Turks had done at this time in the 1980s, the Azerbaijanis, they had placed landmines in different regions of that area. Now, landmines are horrible under all circumstances, but there is a saying that all is fair in love and war. And so somehow it's okay, but basically these are booby traps. They're placed under the ground, and when somebody steps on them, they blow up. When machinery goes through them, they blow up. And what happens is after the war, after all the fighting has been done, people retreat, they go back to their homes, everything is settled except for what? The landmines. Nobody's going to go clear them. These are booby traps. You've thrown them in there. And now you can walk away. You get away, and what happens? Those booby traps. Those landmines are still there. So tomorrow, the next day, your children, your children's children, they start walking, they start playing in these areas, and boom, they're done. So the enemy has a way of taking care of its enemy into the distant future. Landmines, they're still active. And they're still active today in that area. So this trust, Halo Trust, they go around not only in Artsakh, but throughout the world. Their specialty is clearing landmines. Yes, I will definitely put a link on today's show notes. Do check out their website. They talk about it. So several years ago, the Halo Trust was made known to us here in the United States by a dear lady named Gala. She came over here. Danilova, she came here from Artsakh. She shared her story. She shared the work that Halo does. And subsequently, we had a chance to go and visit her out there and see what they do. I saw firsthand. And when you see the size of these bombs, when you see the size of these landmines, it's just outrageous. Because you realize that the innocents are going to be standing on them. And sure enough, year after year, there are incidents, sometimes 2-3 a year, sometimes 4 a year, of children playing on these landmines, people crossing landmines and being blown up. severely disfigured, some of them finding their death. And so the Halo Trust clears out these landmines. But they need money to do that. So again, think about the wall that somebody made to stop the bullet. Yes, God will stop the bullet, but you need that wall there, okay? Yes, we can clear these landmines, but we need to be active in it too. And so dear friend, Seza Uzunyan, last weekend organized this fundraiser and to raise awareness for the Halo Trust. And we were there last Sunday. And this is right in the aftermath of what happened in Dayton and what happened in El Paso. So it was still fresh in our minds, the tragedies, the innocents that were killed. And there we are at a fundraiser. And beautiful, true to form. People were generous because you're telling them, here is a way that you can participate. It was just, I was very overwhelmed. I'll tell you about how much they collected, but just want to tell you how overwhelmed I was to see that kind of reaction. It means that we're all searching. We all want to participate. We all want to do something. Give us a means. For right now, just think about this opportunity that was given to us. Here is a lady who realizes she's living here in America with all the comforts, with the first world problems, right? That we talked about a little while ago. And then you think about third world problems. You think about little kids going out into the fields and being blown up. And when you think about that, you have two options. You can say, too bad. You can say, too bad. That's an option. Or you can have an enough moment. That's what Seza had. Enough. I've got to do something about it. I've got to get out there. And thank God we have enough people that are having enough moments. Those enough moments are the turning point in your life where you realize that, okay, I've got to do something about it. And she organized this beautiful fundraiser. We all got together. We listened to stories. We saw some films. And thank God, $30,000 was raised. That's not chump change. $30,000, okay? Now, she also needs another $20,000 because to clear off this village of all the landmines, the name of the village is Maratuch, it requires $100,000. Now, she's found somebody who's going to match the fund, believe it or not. So she needs to raise $100,000 to clear this village. She's raised $30,000. If she can get another $20,000, she'll have somebody to match it. The $50,000 becomes $100,000. Why? Because one person has decided enough moment. Why? Because one person has decided, let me build the wall so that the bullet can stop right there. Because one person decides, I've had an enough moment. I need to be that instrument of peace. Isn't that what we pray for? St. Francis of Assisi's prayer. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. You want peace in this world? You can pray all you want, but you need to take that step because you don't want to be somewhere there is no peace. Don't you want to be in that place where there is peace? Of course you do. And each of us has got to accept that responsibility. That's why when this happened over the weekend in Dayton and in El Paso, I was kind of incensed that people were looking for politicians, for people were looking for government. Call the government to do this. Hey, haven't they screwed it up already? How about us taking ownership of this problem that we've created? A world where we're laughing at stupid jokes, where we're accepting violence, where we're teaching our children to live with violence. How about us waking up and saying, we need to be the instruments of peace? How about us waking up and saying that, hey, if you want to clear a minefield, I'm willing to go out there. I'm willing to go out there and sponsor a few people, get a few people who will give the money for it. If I want to help people overcome hunger. I need to be able to roll up my sleeves and make a meal for them. If I want to console somebody who is in prison or is in the hospital, then I have to get out of my comfort zone and kind of like go there and comfort. Yeah, it's not pleasant. But let me tell you something. It wasn't pleasant for God to come down to earth either. But he came here. And he said, okay, King of kings, Lord of lords, the one who took the earth and created man, and he knew that that man was going to turn against him. Still, he came and said, I love this man. I love these people. I'm going to come there. And it requires us to be participants in the work that God is doing. It requires us to get out of our comfort levels and to sacrifice, to understand that badarak, that word, sacrifice, is something that is not reserved for God alone. And it doesn't matter if you could sit here and pray all the hymns backwards and forwards. If you're not willing to get out of your comfort zone, to put your feet into the fire, to go out there and extend your hands, to give of yourself, then stop it. Stop it. Quit pretending. You know, I'm sorry I'm talking like this, but it bothers me because we have such a beautiful faith that's a faith of action. And we open ourselves up to incredible criticism when we start pretending that it's not about us, but it's a God in heaven who sort of enjoys watching people suffer. There's no enjoyment in that. Not for us and not for God. We need to be realistic. This is what relevance is about, right? This is a real world. I'm tired of people coming up to me. Why did God allow this? What do you mean God allow what? Why did God allow love? How about that one? Well, that only works in the framework of the bigger picture. When you understand that love, when you understand what love is, there's hurt in love. There's compassion in love. There's caring in love. There's sacrifice in love. Now, can we talk about those things? Obviously, we're talking about something different than what people are accustomed to. And that's why I want to end with this too. Thank God for all these people who are doing these beautiful things and these beautiful actions. But it's not just about the money. Yes, $30,000 was collected for Halo. And there's another $20,000 that we need. And if you're inclined to give, please do. But here's the thing. Equally as important is raising awareness. In raising awareness, you're hoping that the hearts are going to be opened. You're hoping that people will understand that they are part of the solution as well. It's not about just looking up and saying, God, come down and help. But it's about saying, God, open my heart. Give me the strength to do the work that I need to do. And so God bless all of you who take that extra moment to give of yourself. And so I leave you with this very simple message. Do it. No, that's not a Nike slogan. Before it was Nike's, it was the Christian slogan. Yes, Jesus said, just do it. Guy comes up and says, Lord, my son, he's been paralyzed. He's in bed. Jesus says, does he want to be healed? Yes, yes, he does. Well, then get up. Take up your pallet and walk. What is Jesus saying there? He's saying, do it. Lord, my daughter is possessed by demons. They've overcome her. Jesus said, let them out. Open your heart. Just do it. Why couldn't we heal the people? How much longer must I be with you, says Jesus. You have it. And think about the invitation that's given to us at that point. Think about this little Armenia that's sitting there against all of the odds that's keeping that has been kept alive. What is it? It just do it. Believe that if God is inside of you, what evil can there possibly exist next to the goodness of God? If God is love, how can hatred ever overtake it? And if God's goodness, that light, is shining, what darkness can ever overcome it? Is it possible that this is the magic? Is it possible that this is God's blessings? That becomes the reason why we've existed despite all the negativity. Is this possible that this is why we have the audacity to turn around and say peace unto all? That there is a real peace that transcends the words and the emotions that we have and our understanding that we have. It's a true peace. It's God's peace. Let me tell you. This is the peace that is missing from the world. And it's that peace that we have to offer the world. It's the same peace that was offered 2,000 years ago. Jesus Christ. Okay. The piano player has arrived, which means Susie is here. I'll be back in a couple moments.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that message, and thank you, all of you, for all of your messages that you send my way. Listen, I told you about a story that happened over the weekend with the Halo Trust, with CESA. You know, all of us have our missions and our calls. It's an open invitation to walk in the shoes of others. That's what this ministry is about, is to walk in the shoes of others, to feel other people's pain, and then to do something about it. Hey, if you walk in the shoes of somebody else and you feel that there's a pebble in that shoe which prevents you from walking straight, or gives you pain as you're walking, what do? You move over, you take the pebble out of your shoe. The only way that you know that that pebble is in your shoe is by walking in that shoe. That's how simple it is. There is pain all over the world. And when we have our projects that we throw out, these are just unique projects, but there are so many others. And that's why I get excited when people take the initiative. And so please share with us your stories, because I know there are so many more of you that are walking in the shoes of others that I want to hear your short stories. I want to share them with others so that they become inspirations for others to do likewise. God bless you all for doing the good work, and thank you for sharing it with me on the and for allowing me to be a part of those many beautiful ministries. Tonight we're going to be at the homeless shelter. We're going to be doing one out there. Michelle is sponsoring tonight's feed at the Ascensia Center. There are just too many good things that are happening for us to focus in on so much negativity. It is really a tough world, and I pray that each of us can find the strength, can find the motivation to do the good work. It is really sometimes disheartening. It is scary. Let me say it that way. It is scary out of our minds when you hear the stories. But there are glimmers of hope. There is brightness all around. And it's up to us to look at those bright points and to raise the awareness and say, yes, there is something good out there. And those good points need to be emphasized. Okay, will you do that? Okay, well, let me give you a simple one. How about tonight? Just before you go to bed, turn on the news. I know you shouldn't do that, but turn on the news. I guarantee they're going to talk about the one accident that took place on a local freeway. And sadly, that person is going to be delayed from getting home. They're not going to tell you about the 10 million other people who made it home okay. That's what I mean about some of the good news. We need to share some of the good news. 10 million people made it home okay on your freeway systems last night or tonight. Right? Don't focus in on the one. It's easy to do because we're filled with all this negativity, but it's a small little exercise that you can do to make the shift. Find your enough moments. I pray for that. Listen, I want to thank you for joining us today. We're next week is the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, and I'm trying to put together some kind of a musical message for next week's podcast. I don't know if we'll succeed in that, but I want to invite you at all the usual spots. August 20th, we're going to have a very special event for His Holiness Vazgen the First. 25 years ago, he passed on from this life. He was truly a giant. I also want to do a little special for him, for his memory as well. I'm in charge of an event that's taking place at the Western Diocese with the blessings of His Eminence Archbishop Hovnan Derderian, who was he's going to be participating in this event as well. Put it on your calendar. Check out our show notes, not only for this, but everything we talked about. I'll have some links that you could follow and get more information. And of course, we're on all the socials as well as inhisshoes.org. You could just check out all these places, get in touch with us and drop us messages. And finally, a small little note from Pelly, who listens to us from up north. Thank you very much. Just love the little humor that she threw our way. She said, before all of the canned laughter and all of those taped before a live studio audience, this is in reference to what we talked about last week, she said, how could you have possibly forgotten Lucille Ball? And Polly, yes, thank you for the reminder. She said that she not only made us laugh then, she continues to make us laugh. And that's so true. No need for any canned laughter there, right? People laughed, and we all laughed because it was funny. Anyway, thank you for the note, and thank you, all of you, for all your prayers and support. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Vazgen inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of VPostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath. Let's get out!